This morning, we're talking about new books, and Philip Graham and Tanya Leitsakos are here, and we'll get to some more of their picks in a moment. I do, again, though, want to mention, too, this is one of those times during the year that we're asking for your financial support. You are very important to the continued operation of this station. Over 40% of the budget for the station that maintains our equipment, that keeps the transmitter going, that pays for programming, that money comes from you. That's why we can do this without any commercials. We do get some government support, but over time that has shrunk. The costs don't shrink, so the only place that we can go to make up the difference is to listeners, and that's actually the way we like it. We like the idea that people who listen to the service, value it enough so that they're helping to pay the bills. So if you haven't yet made a contribution, we'd like to hear from you this morning, and we have this big book giveaway going. For a contribution of $40 or more during Focus, we will send you a book or books from our collection. You can have hardcover nonfiction, hardcover fiction, or you can have two paperbacks. And chances are it may be one of each. We'll pick them out. There are too many books. We can't offer you the choice, but we guarantee that it will be something good, recent book, fiction, or nonfiction for a $40 contribution or above. So if you've been thinking about it, now is the time. 244-WILL or 9455. That's the number to call. Well, let me see. Whose turn is it? I think Philip. Philip, yeah. He's one of those kids in the classroom. He's waving his hand. Yes.
I get the sense of certain predictability about my appearances here, because if it isn't Portuguese, it's the Wizard of Oz.
Frank
Baum. That's
right.
I know this because he comes in and he buys all the Wizard of Oz books.
I keep buying them. We're rolling through them, and my daughter, who's just turned six, adores these books. And I think actually since I've been on the show last, I think I didn't mention on the last show, but the last time I mentioned, I've been like four Oz books since. Mm-hmm. And they're available, all the books, and there are about 14 or 15 of them are available in paperback and hardcover. If you can afford them, I really recommend the hardcover books because they're very beautifully put together, and the mm-hmm. illustrations, many of them are in color, are just gorgeous, very beautiful books, children's books from the turn of the century that have been lovingly reproduced. One of my favorite of all the ones, not the current one we're reading, we're right now reading The Scarecrow of Oz. We just did the TikTok of Oz. We're about to do Rinkatink of Oz. We recently did The Patchwork Girl of Oz. However, The Emerald City of Oz, I had two brief passages here that give you sort of a range of it. One is the extraordinary wonder that is an invention that's always goes on in these books. You never know what's going to happen next, and you're almost always delighted. Here, Dorothy and her friends are visiting the land of the Fuddles, people who are actually puzzle pieces. And whenever strangers appear at their land, they all fall apart because all they want to do is give pleasure to people putting together puzzles. And so after the clatter, because everybody's fallen apart, at the approach of Dorothy, an intense stillness reigned in the town. The strangers entered the first house they came to, which was also the largest, and found the floor strewn with pieces of the people who lived there. They looked much like fragments of wood neatly painted, and were all sorts of curious and fantastic shapes, no two pieces being in any way alike. They picked up some of these pieces and looked at them carefully. On one which Dorothy held was an eye, which looked at her pleasantly, but with an interested expression, as if it wondered what she was going to do with it. Quite nearby, she discovered and picked up a nose, and by matching the two pieces together, found that they were part of a face. "If I could find the mouth," she said, "this Fuddle might be able to talk and tell us what to do next." Hmm. And that's just one of the many, many lands that Dorothy travels to with her friends in this one. And here is something that gives a sense of the wonderful humor and also invention of these books. And here they're visiting the Royal Athletic College of Oz, which is directed by Professor H.M. Wogglebug, T.E. Now, the Wogglebug is a bug who used to live in a schoolhouse, and he used to listen, and he learned a lot from all the lessons that the teacher was giving. And one day he was discovered, and the teacher picked him up and put him under a screen so that he could be magnified on the wall. And then something happened, and everybody ran out of the schoolroom, and the Wogglebug just moved off the screen, and he remained large. And but he was very educated. And so H.M. is highly magnified. He's Professor H.M. Highly Magnified Wogglebug, T.E. for thoroughly educated. And the ruler of Oz, Ozma of Oz, has made him the director of the Royal Athletic College of Oz. And Dorothy, again, and her friends, the Shaggy Man and others, are visiting. Welcome, Dorothy, said the Wogglebug, and welcome to all your friends. We are indeed pleased to receive you at this great temple of learning. I thought it was an athletic college, said the Shaggy Man. It is, my dear sir, answered the Wogglebug proudly. Here it is that we teach the youth of our great land scientific college athletics in all their purity. Don't you teach them anything else? Asked Dorothy. Don't they get any reading, writing, and arithmetic? Oh, yes, of course, they get those and more, returned the professor. But such things occupy little of their time. Please follow me, and I will show you how my scholars are usually occupied. This is a class hour, and they are all busy. They followed him to a big field back at the college building where several hundred young Ozites were at their classes. In one place they played football, in another baseball. Some played tennis, some golf, some were swimming in a big pool. Upon a river which wound through the grounds, several crews and racing boats were rowing with great enthusiasm. Other groups of students played basketball and cricket, while in one place a ring was roped in to permit boxing and wrestling by the energetic youths. All the collegians seemed busy, and there was much laughter and shouting. This college, said Professor Wogglebug complacently, is a great success. Its educational value is undisputed, and we are turning out many great and valuable citizens every year. But when do they study? Asked Dorothy. Study? Said the Wogglebug, looking perplexed at the question. Yes, when do they get their arithmetic and geography and such things? Oh, they take doses of those every night and morning, was the reply. What do you mean by doses? Dorothy inquired. Why, we use the newly invented school pills made by your friend the wizard. These pills we have found to be very effective, and they save a lot of time. Please step this way, and I will show you our laboratory of learning. He led them to a room in the building where many large bottles were standing in rows upon shelves. These are the algebra pills, said the professor, taking one down from the bottle, one of the bottles. One night on retiring is equal to 4 hours of study. Here are the geography pills, one at night and one in the morning. In this next bottle are the Latin pills, one 3 times a day. Then we have the grammar pills, one before each meal, and the spelling pills, which are taken whenever needed. Your scholars must have to take a lot of pills, remarked Dorothy thoughtfully. How do they take them? In applesauce? No, my dear, they are sugar-coated and are quickly and easily swallowed. I believe the students would rather take the pills than study, and certainly the pills are a more effective method. You see, until these school pills were invented, we wasted a lot of time in study that may now be better employed in practicing athletics. Seems to me the pills are a good thing, said Omby Amby, who remembered how it used to make his head ache as a boy to study arithmetic. They are, sir, declared the Wogglebug earnestly. They give us an advantage over all other colleges because at no loss of time our boys become thoroughly conversant with Greek and Latin, mathematics and geography, grammar and literature. You see, they are never obliged to interrupt their games to acquire the lesser branches of learning. It's a great invention, I'm sure, said Dorothy. We live in a land of progress, announced Professor Wogglebug. It's easier to swallow knowledge than to acquire it laboriously from books. Is it not so, my friends? Some folks can swallow anything, said Aunt Em.
What year was this?
I think it was 1910.
1910.
It's really quite amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And for people who might only know Oz from the movie The Wizard of Oz and this basic introductory story, how many books did Frank Baum?
15.
15 books. 15. With many different interesting strange lands and peoples and
many more
stuff.
Characters have become major characters who are equivalent in importance as the books go on with the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion and so forth.
All right. Very good. We have some callers here, a caller to talk with in Downs. So let's do that on our toll-free line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I want to tell you, I love it when you do these shows, and I hate it because I work at home and I get nothing done. I have spent my whole time with little slips of paper madly writing down titles and authors of books. I'm glad you just did the Oz books because I have a pop-up book to tell you about.
Oh, it's beautiful, I know.
It's called A Piece of Cake.
Oh, I know that one,
and
too.
Pages
I thought she was going to tell us about the Wizard of Oz.
No, I don't know of a Wizard of Oz pop-up. Oh. But The Piece of Cake is just this wonderful book. It's shaped like a piece of cake.
Yeah.
And it's about mice who are invited, city mice who are invited to a church mouse birthday party, and they're worried that there won't be a cake because these aren't very sophisticated mice. And the postman tells them that a lady has stashed a piece of cake under a chair, saying that it would make her fat. And they drag this off, and they have these adventures along the way where everybody who helps them takes a piece of cake, of course, as payment. But it's absolutely wonderful.
Hmm. Isn't that Pianowski? Is that his name?
David Pelham.
Pelham, that's right. And there's a Sam Sandwich, too, I think, by him.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, I would like that one. They're so well engineered, and the farther you open the pages, the more happens in the action. And it's just great fun.
Very good. Very good. And again, the title of this particular book is A Piece of Cake.
Piece of Cake.
And David Pelham, is the author, like P-E-L-H-A-M?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
And another, this wasn't a pop-up book, but somebody found at Christmas, one of my favorite children's series is the Moomin books.
Which one?
Moomin. Moomins are the characters, the little creatures. It's a Tove Jansson, I believe. I don't know whether she's called it.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah. And, Philip, if you don't know these books, you should investigate them.
Yeah, they are in the classics section.
Because they're absolutely wonderful. Yeah. And she has a book that's not a pop-up book, mm-hmm. but it's a cutout book, you know, where the pages have cutouts.
Oh, yeah.
What's
the name again?
The last name of the author is, I believe it's Janssen.
Okay.
I'm always unsure of this one, but the creatures are Moomins, M-O-O-M-I-N-S.
I do know just about these books, but I haven't read them.
They're wonderful.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank
Our
you.
Kids love them, and they're just fanciful and absolutely terrific.
Great.
So.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. And sorry you're not getting anything done.
You're kind of bad, but we don't apologize.
I don't.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. Thank
there you. Is a beautiful Wizard of Oz pop-up book that came out this year. Uh-huh. It's the most intricate. It's by Robert Sabuda, who has done all these incredible mm-hmm. pop-ups. He does them every year about Christmas time. I think he has about five of them. And this Wizard of Oz one, he did it for the 100th anniversary uh-huh. or something. And it's just fantastic. So many intricate little... Not really a book for a child. Mm-hmm. I mean, have to be very careful with it.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I'm going to look that up.
Okay. Well, we are here and certainly would be happy to have other questions or comments, or if people have books they would like to recommend, they can call us. 333-9455 here in Champaign, Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Who's next? Tanya, bring it.
Okay, this is the big one. All my friends know I've been talking about this book for a mm-hmm. long time now. I'm absolutely enthralled with it. And the sequel just came out too, so, and I've brought it as well. Mm. It's called Eddie's Bastard by William Kowalski. It's his first novel. It's K-O-W-A-L-S-K-I. And it's about a young man who was left as a baby in a basket in his grandfather's barn. And his grandfather found him and decided to keep him. I believe he took him to the doctor and said, give him a good once-over, make sure nothing's wrong with him, and, you know, because I aim to keep him, I think is what he said. There was just a note on the basket that said, Eddie's
like
Bastard.
Books by people who talk like that.
You're
right,
yeah. I do. You're absolutely right.
Me
I
and
do.
Portuguese and you, yeah, okay.
That's
right.
Right. Some of us aren't as cultured as others, Phillips.
No, I
yeah, I mean, some of us, I really like those kind of books. Yeah, I love books where people talk
great.
Like that.
Yeah.
Probably because of, you know, my hometown and all.
Yeah.
But
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, not at all, not at all. Everybody knows I like books mm-hmm. with people that talk like Hicks.
Yeah.
and they, boy, do they in this book. They live on Lake Erie. Anyway, I'm sorry. He finds the basket, and it just was the note that says Eddie's Bastard. Eddie is his son, who was a Vietnam war hero, who was a fighter pilot in Vietnam, and they come from a long line of military men. The great-great-grandfather was in the Civil War. The grandfather, Thomas Mann, no relation to the author, he says. Mm-hmm. And if you know the grandfather, there's no way he could be. He was in World War II, and then his son, Eddie, was in Vietnam, and then there's this baby. We don't know who the mother is. He just finds him in the barn, and he's decided to raise him. And the grandpa is just the most charming man. I love him. Yeah. He's definitely a protagonist in the story, not as much as the young man growing up, but he's kind of a drunk, but he makes sure that this baby gets all the care he needs. He teaches him to read. They don't have a television in the house. He teaches him to read, to hunt, to fish, to cook fried bologna sandwiches, which is basically all they eat. He plays all these wonderful games with him. And here's a passage. Be prepared to laugh, and the book is full of things like this, laugh out loud things. Sometimes in the afternoons we played Munchkins. This was great fun because it was bloody and murderous and frightening, and I never knew exactly what was going to happen. But it went mostly like this. Grandpa sat on the roof of the old doghouse, unoccupied now by any dog, with a glass of whiskey nearby and his fedora pushed back on his head. I would stand next to him and he'd put his hand on my shoulder. We would be absolutely silent. My ears would ring with the vast depth of the quiet that had suddenly descended over the yard. I was attuned, coiled, ready. Suddenly there would come a rustle from the bushes. "There they are," I whisper, pointing. "Right," Grandpa shouts. He sets down his whiskey and begins pulling imaginary things out of the doghouse, handing them to me. "Dynamite," he says. "Check. Fuse? Check. Plunger? Check. You have all your equipment? Compass, pistol, flare gun, life jacket, inflatable raft, fishing rod?" Sometimes this game became confused in Grandpa's mind with his sojourn in the South Pacific, and he liked to make sure I had everything I needed in case I somehow ended up in the ocean. "Check." "Okay," he says. "Go plant your charge." I would sneak off to whatever bush or tree or hedge the Munchkins were hiding in this time. The Munchkins were a band of horrible, ferocious creatures who'd lived in our yard since the beginning of the world. They were small, about my height, and they had long fangs dripping with saliva and claws that could rip you in half. The men had beards reaching to their waists. The women ate human children whenever they could get them. It was imperative that they be wiped out so the world would be safe for kids again. Blowing up Munchkins was my terrifying duty, and I was proud to perform it. It was my responsibility as a hero, as the son of my father. I planted my charge in the bush, one hand on my pistol in case they should attack. Sometimes they did. The hand-to-hand combat that ensued was fierce, and I was often gravely wounded, but I always defeated them. "How many are there?" Grandpa would shout out from the doghouse. 811! "Jesus Christ, report back to headquarters!" I would race back to the doghouse. "Ready on charge!" "Right. Countdown. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, Kablammo!" shouted Grandpa, pressing down the plunger. The world would be shaken by a tremendous explosion. I'd be knocked to my feet, lie unconscious for a few moments, then return to where I'd set the charge to finish off any survivors or to take prisoners, depending on my mood toward them that day.
As an admirer of the Oz books, though, I have to protest this indiscriminate slaughter of Munchkins. It doesn't seem right at all.
Yeah, I guess that was an inappropriate follow-up to the Munchkins. Yeah. But he's trying to learn about himself, and he's trying to learn about his heritage, and his grandpa's going to make darn sure that he does. Mm-hmm. And they live in Manville. And his last name is Mann, and they come from a long line of Manns, and they once owned the town until the great ostrich fiasco of 1942. His grandpa bought some ostriches and decided to do some ostrich farming, and they ended up ruining the town. They jumped the fence because he just had this little fence. Mm. He didn't realize how big ostriches were. Mm. And he jumped the fence, and they kind of destroyed the town, and he's kind of been mocked ever since in the town. But Billy is a writer, and it's a coming of age story. He tries to, he's trying to track down his mother, find out who she was, and he's following all these little clues. He also has a room in this farmhouse, which is exactly as his father left it. The farmhouse has been there for years, and when his father died, his grandfather left the room absolutely intact. And his father was a big Hemingway fan, and so there's this old copy of a Hemingway novel on the desk, and it's all covered with dust, and it's all kind of creepy, but he gets all these clues from his past from this room. Yeah. Really neat, and a very, definitely a very black and white, good and evil kind of book. Mm. Not a lot of gray area. he's not a literary genius, but this story, I mean, he is a storyteller. It's fantastic. And the sequel is called Somewhere South of Here, in which he actually, he's grown now, and he goes on to Santa Fe, New Mexico to find his mother.
Okay.
Love it.
The author's William Kowalski, and that book is Eddie's Bastard. We're almost already at the midpoint of this hour, and we're talking about books. It's always fun when our guests are here. Tanya Liatsakos from Pages for All Ages and Philip Graham, he's a writer. He teaches writing at University of Illinois. And they always bring books, things that they have been reading that they think are particularly good to share with you. You can do the same. We do want to give you another opportunity, though, here at this point to get in on the big book giveaway. Yeah. Friends, we believe in reading. We believe in books. We would like to have you have some good reading. And we'd also like to have you support the station. And we can make it possible for you to do both. If you give us a call this morning, make a pledge of $40 or more, we'll send you a book, maybe even a couple of them. Maeve Riley is in Pledge Central. She is the editor of our program guide, Patterns Magazine. And I know we have heard from some folks who have taken us up on this offer.
Yeah, quite a few people have already. But, you know, there's, David, you can testify to this. There's hundreds of books. How many? You haven't counted them.
Science has not come up with a number for that one yet.
But there are a lot of books, and David and Jack would be happy to clean up their shelves and give you those books. And you can do that if you support public broadcasting by calling 217-244-9455. Make a pledge of $40 or above, and tell the volunteer that you'd like either a hardback fiction, hardback nonfiction, or two paperback books. And David and Jack will pick one out specially for you, and we'll send it your way.
Yeah. We're really hoping today that we can raise $13,000.
Yes.
And it is, we've set goals that we're going to try to meet all the way along, because we're raising the money, we're now raising the money that we will spend on programming and other costs associated with running the station next year. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th, and on that day, we really need to have in the bank $700,000. It's a lot of money, but we're making good progress toward that, and we're hoping that during this week, which we're almost finished with, that we'll get a good ways toward that. So that's why we've set these daily goals, that we want to continue to maintain a certain momentum and try to stay on track. So that's how it is we've come up with these numbers. And what do you know, Maeve, kind of where we are?
We're just over $10,000, I think, right now. So we've got a little bit of ways to go, but we can do it today. And, you know, don't wait till tomorrow. Don't wait till Saturday. Now's the time to make your pledge. 244-9455. Get in on that. We'll give you a book as a thank you gift.
Yeah, that's great. So, again, $40 pledge. We'll offer you a hardcover nonfiction book or hardcover fiction, so you can have your choice, one or the other in hardcover. Or if you'd like, we do have some soft covers, and there we'll send you two, and it might be one of each. We'll pick. We'll promise. We'll find some good things for you. It's just a way that we have of saying thanks, and something that's very much tied into the subject of these programs we do when Tanya and Philip are here. So you can get on the giveaway. You can get some reading for yourself. You can help support the station. You can help us meet our goals. It's only because people who listen are also willing to help pay the bills that we can keep doing this kind of radio that we're doing. I think public radio is special. It's not like what happens on commercial stations. The same thing with TV. You know, we're doing a very different kind of thing here.
Yep.
And the reason that we can do it is that we're not, it's not a money-making operation, you know? It's not
no.
a for-profit. we're trying to do good programming here, and that's what we do with that money that people contribute. It goes into the product, and
that's
then
right.
it comes back to them as programming. So we hope now that folks would take that opportunity and give us a call, 244-9455, and get some books.
That's right. And, you know, if you make a pledge at the $75 level or above, you can also pick up our member card, which entitles you to dining at local restaurants, 2-for-1 entrees. And it's a great great thing to have. Again, another way for us to say thank you to you for supporting Fine Broadcasting.
Well, thanks, Maeve. We'll check back with you again maybe about 20 minutes, and we'll give people right near the end of the show, again, one more opportunity to get in on the book giveaway. But, of course, if people during the course of the show would like to call, the folks are there waiting for the call, and you pick up the telephone right now and dial the number 244-WILL or 9455 and make a pledge. And if you'd like to call in here on the program, it's 333-WILL. It's that same number as always. And you can talk with our guests, Tanya Leotsakos from Pages for All Ages Bookstore, and Philip Graham. He teaches writing at University of Illinois. And I think it's Philip's turn.
Yeah, I have a book of poetry here. It is, April is a poetry month.
Poetry month, mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is a book of poems by the poet Cornelius Eady. E-A-D-Y is how his last name is spelled, Cornelius Eady. He's a wonderful poet. I love one of his books, Victims of the Latest Dance Craze, which actually won the Lamont Poetry Prize a number of years ago. Excuse me. And this book is called Brutal Imagination, and it's in several parts. The first part is a series of poems in which the narrator of the poems, there are a number of poems, and they're all narrated by the same character, and the speaker is the young black man Susan Smith claimed kidnapped her children. And if you remember years ago, the woman, and I think it was North or South Carolina, who claimed that a black man had sort of carjacked her, thrown her out of the car, taken her children, and then the children were drowned in a lake with the car and so forth, and she claimed a black man had done that. Well, mm-hmm. It turned out he never existed. In fact, she's the one, of course, who did it. And so Cornelius Eady has written a series of poems in which here's the young black man, the imaginary black man who she's brought into being. And there's three short poems here. First is How I Got Born. Though it's common belief that Susan Smith willed me alive at the moment her babies sank into the lake when called, I come. My job is to get things done. I am piecemeal. I make my living by taking things. So now a mother needs me clothed in hand-me-downs and a knit cap. Whatever. We arrive, bereaved, on a stranger's step. Baby, they weep. Poor child. My heart. Susan Smith has invented me because nobody else in town will do what she needs me to do. I mean, jump in an idling car and drive off with two sad and frightened kids in the back. Like a bad lover, she has given me a poisoned heart. It pounds both our ribs, black, angry, nothing but business. Since her fear is my blood and her need partly mythical, everything she says about me is true. And then near the end, when the sheriff is getting to close to the truth in the interview weeks later, this is that point, and this is called sympathy, because he doesn't believe Susan and what she's made up. Sympathy. The sheriff's too good to be true. He tries to urge Susan and me to part. He trusts a friendly cup of coffee will skim me loose, but we're hard to untangle. I won't be easy. I won't be easy. We know his help is poison. He is courting us. We run a cold sweat while he waits. He is too good to be true. I am not for his ears. Susan knows. She tries not to weep. He attempts to lean toward us. We bob together in the god-awful silence. And the next poem is titled, which I won't read, Confession.
Hmm. Chilling.
Yeah.
Just last week on WILL, Mrs. Inge and I, just by chance, I'm not sure how this worked out, we each had poets on. I talked to somebody in the morning. She talked to somebody in the afternoon. And she and I, the night before, did something I don't think I've ever done in my life. We sat there in the living room, she and I, and read poems to each other.
Yeah.
And we had the greatest time.
Yeah.
I never would have thought. And I, you know, I like reading and I like writers. But I guess I hadn't really done very much poetry.
You know, I'm the same. Reading. I'm not the biggest poetry fan in the world. It just captures me, though. Yeah.
So much great poetry out there.
I know.
Yeah. And
appreciate
we had a great
it, but
time.
I just need novels.
And I think that those two things, I think that reading Reading the poem on the page is one kind of experience, and hearing it read out loud and reading it out loud is another experience.
Sure.
And both of the, I think you get different things both ways. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, one could say that poetry, what poetry is about, is being spoken out, which it is.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, that there are two, you get stuff both ways.
Yeah.
And I was, we really had a great time, and I was sort of surprised because it's just not something that I had ever done.
Well, you know, you could do that with fiction, too. I mean, I've mentioned that I've done that with my son. That we
do that all the time.
Yeah, you know, my son and I, we read, well, not so much aloud, we read silently together.
That's right.
We'll have
I
two
like
copies of the
too.
Same book, and we'll read it like a chapter together, but we'll also read back and forth. We'll interrupt each other, saying, oh, have you got here yet, you know, and then read a passage or a sentence and so forth. And I just briefly just wanted to jump in and say that right now we're reading Winesburg, Ohio by Sherwood Anderson. And
which is just incredible.
It's just a wonderful book. I think it's very an ideal book for, say, a 14-year-old to be reading, since it has so much truth about human beings in it. And Sherwood Anderson has a marvelous way of talking about the hidden realities within inside people. And we're having really wonderful conversations. It's ideal, too, because they're very short chapters. So you read for, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes, 10 minutes tops, and then we just sit and we talk about
it. I love that idea. Two copies of
a
book.
Yeah. It's reading is it's such a solitary experience. Generally, it's you in the book.
Yeah.
But then this is a way of sharing it with somebody else in a sort of immediate way. I'm sure people probably have the experience of reading a book and then giving it to somebody else and have them
and
read
have
the
them
book,
read it, sure.
But it's not quite the quite
doing it together.
My boyfriend
is really
and
good.
I really like enjoy reading one novel aloud.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh yeah, that's great.
I read one night, he reads the next. It's nice.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah.
People used to do that in the days before radio and television and what have you.
We love to do that. It's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Again, if people have, we do have a caller here, somebody who actually looks like they were driving on the interstate and stopped at a rest stop. So we'll do that. We'll go here to line number 4. Hello.
Hi, yeah, I was actually driving and had to stop. I tuned you in a little bit late when I got in my car, but I haven't heard you talk about any nonfiction yet. Oh. And I wanted to talk about a biography that I actually didn't read, but listen to on books and tape in my car as I commute back and forth from work, called T.R. The Last Romantic, which is a biography of Theodore Roosevelt by H.W. Brands, which really is like one of the best biographies I've read ever, I would say. Teddy Roosevelt sort of is a fascinating character to begin with, and the book is really well written. It's first of all, gives a great, and it really captures the character of Roosevelt and sort of these competing tendencies in him. But in addition to that, the part that I think that really made it so enjoyable is that Brand's language use is really interesting. I mean, he's able to really kind of use these words and then kind of give this multiple meanings. It's almost poetic in the way that he sketches out the life of Roosevelt. And I guess not sketch, because it's a pretty long book, but
didn't Teddy Roosevelt, I think I heard this recently, didn't he explore the Amazon at some point in his life?
After his presidency, I think he went down.
God, what a guy.
I think immediately after he went to Europe and did sort of a grand tour of Europe. But then I believe it was shortly after that he spent several months in South America and also in Africa. I forget now. It's been, it's been about 6 months since I finished the book. But he did a lot of traveling and writing about it. You know, he had this. He's an interesting character because he really, in some ways, he founded the national park system in sort of modern conservation notions. But at the same time, he was a hunter and he had a very pro-American. I think nowadays we would see him as sort of this imperialist kind of seeing all the world as, through American eyes. But at the same time, I think, especially in his time, he was also one of the people who said, we need to, in some ways, it put a focus on the idea that we need to preserve these lands. And he really is, I don't know if he founded it, but he was really very instrumental in establishing our national park system and the notion that, kind of introducing Americans to the wilderness, really, in a lot of ways. So,
great.
He also, I think, in reading the, in listening to the book, one of the things that really struck me about Roosevelt is that he kind of invented the modern presidency and the sense of power that the president has, and the bully pulpit and all of those kinds of ideas. And the president is in some ways as the leader of his party and as the leader of public opinion. So I think it's really it's a long book, but really highly recommended if you like biography.
Tell us again the author.
The author is H.W. Brands. He's a history professor at Texas A&M University, and the book is T.R. The Last Romantic.
Great. Great suggestion.
He has a new one out on Ben Franklin, which I'm eager to read, but haven't gotten the time for that one yet. These tend to be long books. So. But anyway, enjoying the program. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks
very much.
And we certainly, I probably think we talk a lot more about fiction, I guess, on these shows. I know that Philip and Tanya really like fiction, but occasionally we do come up with nonfiction. And certainly... if there's something that you'd like to recommend, can be anything, fiction, nonfiction. I don't want anybody to think there's some kind of rule that, we're only talking about novels on the show. So whatever, if you want to suggest a book, that's great. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Or you have some other kind of book question. Back, I think, to Tanya next term.
This is a young adult novel called Seed Folks by Paul Fleischman. It's very much for everyone, though.
Yeah.
It's definitely not just for young adults or for children. It's a gardening book. Anyone that likes to garden or just enjoys being in the garden, this is a book about how growing things healed a community.
Hmm.
13 chapters, 13 different narrators, all live in a little community in Cleveland, Ohio, kind of the projects. And each chapter talks about, this is the young girl that started it all. I'm going to read the very first narrative here. Kim is her name. I stood before our family altar. It was dawn. No one else in the apartment was awake. I stared at my father's photograph, his thin face stern, lips latched tight, his eyes peering permanently to the right. I was 9 years old and still hoped that perhaps his eyes might move. Might notice me. The candles and the incense sticks lit the day before to mark his death anniversary had burned out. The rice and meat offered him were gone. After the evening feast, past midnight, I'd been wakened by my mother's crying. My oldest sister had joined in. My own tears had then come as well, but for a different reason. I turned from the altar, tiptoed to the kitchen, and quietly drew a spoon from a drawer. I filled my lunch thermos with water and reached into our jar of dried lima beans. Then I walked outside to the street. The sidewalk was completely empty. It was Sunday, early in April. An icy wind teetered trash cans and turned my cheeks to marble. In Vietnam, we had no weather like that. Here in Cleveland, people call it spring. I walked half a block, then crossed the street and reached the vacant lot. I stood tall and scouted. No one was sleeping on the old couch in the middle. I'd never entered the lot before or wanted to. I did so now, picking my way between tires and trash bags. I nearly stepped on two rats gnawing and froze. Then I told myself that I must show my bravery. I continued farther and chose a spot far from the sidewalk and hidden from view by a rusty refrigerator. I had to keep my project safe. I took out my spoon and began to dig. The snow had melted, but the ground was hard. After much work, I finished one hole, then a second, then a third. I thought about how my mother and sisters remembered my father, how they knew his face from every angle and held in their fingers the feel of his hands. I had no such memories to cry over. I'd been born 8 months after he died. Worse, he had no memories of me. When his spirit hovered over our altar, did it even know who I was? I dug 6 holes. All his life in Vietnam, my father had been a farmer. Here, our apartment house had no yard, but in that vacant lot, he would see me. He would watch my beans break ground and spread and would notice with pleasure their pods growing plump. He would see my patience and my hard work. I would show him that I could raise plants as he had. I would show him that I was his daughter. My class had sprouted lima beans in paper cups the year before. I now placed a bean in each of the holes. I covered them up, pressing the soil down firmly with my fingertips. I opened my thermos and watered them all, and I vowed to myself that those beans would thrive. And every chapter, I love gardening so much, and it really shows you how plants can, you know, heal people's hearts. Each chapter is from the perspective of a different person, some of them children, some of them adults, from every possible culture you can imagine. There's a 16-year-old Hispanic pregnant girl. There's an old African-American man who's lost nearly all of his senses. He's in a wheelchair, and he has a British nurse. And the garden sort of brings back his senses. They turn this horrible lot full of trash and you know, whatever, into a garden paradise. Everybody grows something different, and it brings this whole community together, so they're no longer afraid of one another, and they have this thing to share. And it's just...
Wow.
It's really a beautiful book. I loved it.
Goodness. It sounds like a good book for my son and I to read together.
Definitely.
Too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is the title of this book is Seed Folks. So that's all one word. And the author is Paul Fleischman, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We maybe have about a minute or two.
Yeah, okay.
I know. You know, I almost interviewed this guy. Unfortunately, he was here, and unfortunately, something was amiss in the way that the visit went, and he didn't have time. And I'm sorry, because I looked at this book, and
this is a wonderful book.
It's a very interesting looking book, and also, although I thought, how are we going to do this on the radio?
Yeah, well, let's give it a try.
All right, well,
it's by James Elkins, and it's called How to Use Your Eyes. And actually, this was recommended to me by an artist who is reading it herself, and an artist I know in Chicago. And what he does is he takes things like postage stamps, X-rays, engineering drawings, Egyptian scarabs, and he tells you how to look at them. You know, looking very, very carefully at things. Or those are things made by man, or humans, it should be. Mm-hmm. Things made by nature, like a face, a twig, sand, color, the night, mirages, and he goes into it in great detail. And this one is how to look at sand. And what he does, he actually collects... He collects sand. He has a collection by an old naturalist who used to collect sand. And so he's describing one way to think about sand when you look at it. You know, just a little tiny grain. It used to be thought that sand grains became round by rubbing against each other in the surf or by being tumbled together in riverbeds. Recently, geologists have realized that it takes millions of years of abrasion even to begin to round a sand grain. That means that a well-rounded grain may have gone through several cycles. First it was a crystal in a rock, then it was dislodged and ended up on a beach or in a riverbed. It may have been tossed around in the ocean for a couple of million years. Eventually it settled somewhere, say at the bottom of a lake. As smaller grains of dust and dirt settled around it, it became impacted and eventually hardened into stone. A few more millions of years and the lake might have dried up, exposing the lake bottom. Again, the little grain would have sprung free and been washed away to some other beach. Again, it would have been tossed around and gotten a little rounder. A round grain might have lain about on different beaches 3 or 4 times over the course of 100 million years. An amazing thought. It would have sat on a beach long before there were dinosaurs, and then again millions of years after the dinosaurs vanished. And then one last time in the late 19th century, when an amateur naturalist scooped it up and put it on a microscope slide. The smaller the grain, the more slowly it becomes rounded. A really tiny round grain could have been at the bottom of a lake, and then, in the scale of time that only geologists can appreciate, it could have been slowly lifted up into a giant mountain range and then broken off the mountain, washed down into an ocean, stuck in a deep sediment, turned again into a rock, and so on. At least for me, the eons are too long to imagine. Sand grains have no souls, but they are reincarnated, is how one geologist puts it. He says that the average recycling time is around 200 million years, so that a grain of sand that was first sprung free of its first rock 2.4 billion years ago could have been in 10 mountain ranges and 10 oceans since then. Even the giddy numbers of Buddhist reincarnations, some deities live billions of years, can't bring home eternity for me in the way this simple example does. Think of it next time. Hold a grain of sand in your palm.
Hmm.
Mm. How interesting. Wow. Whole
and it's a beautifully like beautifully made book. It has wonderful illustrations, photographs. Really nice.
He's
How to campus. Use your eyes.
He's on campus now, too. He's giving a talk, I think, this afternoon at the Illinois Program for Research in Humanities. Yeah.
Guys, we got to go. Or at least we have to finish up for this time around. That's okay. You can come
still have
back.
Books. I have many books.
Well, we want to say to Philip Graham and Tanya Leotsakos, thanks very much.
Great day.
It's
thanks
always
for
a
having
lot
us.
Of fun to have you here. And I know people enjoy these programs, so we'll have you back on
Great.
Another day.
Great.